Welcome to Combat the Identity Crisis with me, Tabitha Whiteside. How you doing today? Hope you're doing well. Let's get into it. So today I'm very excited to have the testimony of one of my personal good friends, Alex Klein. I asked Alex to if she would consider giving her testimony because for me it is extremely powerful to hear. It's something, the thing that she, that you will hear her speak about, that she dealt with, is not completely abnormal to women and young girls in this day and age, in this culture, in this country, and in this time, but it's something that's not really talked about at all, and I think it's very needed and necessary, and I think it's brave of Alex to be willing to share her testimony, and I'm so looking forward to the breakthrough that comes for her, for the healing of whatever shame and guilt might be, like, having little bits of a hold in her life, but also all of the breakthrough that's going to come to any young girl, any woman who struggles with the same thing that she struggled with. She, I think I'll just let her little audio, her tell her story. I'm really excited to let this episode out. This is the second segment of Tell Me Your Testimony, and again, I'm excited. This is Alex Klein's testimony.
Hey, my name is Alex Klein, and I'm 29 years old. I live in Grand Junction, Colorado, though only just moved here in September of 2018. Before that, I lived in Oklahoma for almost 7 years, and before that, I lived in El Paso, Texas for 22 years. Ever since I was born, I moved to Colorado after getting married, which was a crazy experience for two reasons. The first being that I had only met my husband 6 months before I married him. It was one of those love at first phone call kind of things. The second reason being that I had never realistically pictured myself getting married. Marriage was always a far off kind of thought. Even when I was with my boyfriend of 3 years, who had agreed with me that we'd only date if we both wanted marriage. Even then, I couldn't legitimately picture being married to him, which is the thing I figured I was due for, being 23 years old. I grew up going to church and being around the mentality of getting married in your 20s. If you weren't married by the time you were 30, you were looked at like some kind of freak, and everyone sort of made it their mission to find you a spouse, send you to all the singles Bible study groups, introduce you to every young and single new member that walked through the doors. Marriage still didn't feel like something that would happen for me, despite growing up around that mentality and despite dating for 3 years, literally expecting to marry at some point. There are a few different reasons I felt this way, but the biggest was that before I was 18, I didn't give it much thought at all. I hadn't given much thought to my future, period, mostly because I didn't think I would have a future. I didn't plan on sticking around for very long. So, my testimony is one that I tend to fudge in mixed company, meaning that I don't always go into detail about the things I struggled with as a teenager. As you may have guessed from that statement I made a second ago, I dealt with depression and suicidal thoughts, and they were caused by an addiction I struggled with. So, my family and closest friends know my testimony, as well as a bunch of girls who attended the Bible camp I taught at 2 years ago and the youth group I taught at for 2 years back in Oklahoma. So it's no total secret, but it's also just difficult to share every time, because the very nature of the addiction is such that it tends to make people uncomfortable. It also tends to bring up memories for me, which recall emotions which results in me ugly crying in front of a group of people, which is not something I enjoy ever. When Tabitha asked if I'd be willing to share, I figured recording myself would be easier than speaking to an actual group of people. So here goes. Hopefully, I can power through this and not choke up too bad. My testimony starts at age 12, being very naive and innocent. Age 12 back in 2002 was a hell of a lot different than age 12 in 2019. There wasn't Snapchat, there wasn't Instagram, there was barely even Facebook. I know, ancient times. I was too young to have a MySpace, and I had not entered the world of chat rooms or AOL instant messaging quite yet. The only websites I was allowed to go to on the family computer, were Disney or Nickelodeon, where I would play games and read about the TV shows and stuff. It never occurred to me that the internet could be used for other lascivious activities. Lasciviousness wasn't even part of my mind at that age. Again, different times. Kids these days have no innocence left, it seems. The most I knew about sex was what my mother had told me years before when I had been given the sex talk. If you know my mother, you know that she is a childbirth expert slash consultant. She has vats of knowledge when it comes to pregnancy, childbirth, and child rearing. She had 10 children of her own, so she should be an expert. But I grew up having to listen to these phone conversations about pregnant women's bodies and fluids and tissue and just gross stuff. When she gave me the sex talk, I was very clinical. She was very clinical, very blunt. She straightforwardly told me what sex was for and how it worked. I remember being horrified and disgusted. What she did not tell me in that horror fest was that sex could be used in other ways, strictly for pleasure. So keep in mind, I had no knowledge of this as I got older. That is, I had no knowledge of this until I was 12 years old. When I saw my first pornographic image in a pop-up on the family computer, I had no idea what was going on in the picture. I remember I had to stare at it for a minute to register what I was seeing. One of my personality traits is an insatiable curiosity. I still have that. But it immediately got a hold of that 12-year-old brain. From that moment on, I had to know more. I had to see more. Insatiable curiosity turned into obsession, which turned into addiction. An addiction that would last for the next 5 years. The more I saw, the more I wanted to see, and the less innocence I had left. It became a daily habit, and I was never caught. I had brothers who would also look at smut online every once in a while, so anytime anything was found on that computer, they were immediately blamed for it. I remember being asked once by my mom if I was the one looking at garbage, but I looked her in the eyes and said no, and she trusted me. I was a good kid, good in school, had good friends, went to youth group, read the Bible, everything that was expected of me, but I had this whole other side to me that no one knew about. I was two-faced and good at hiding it. I was an exceptional liar. I knew what I was doing was wrong. I knew that it was making me sick. I would sit in church listening to the pastor talk about secrets and how hidden things can rot a person from the inside out. And he was right. There was no way I was going to tell a living soul what I got myself stuck in, while at the same time knowing how disgusting I felt by being stuck in it. I tried so many times to stop, but I couldn't even go more than a day without indulging. as soon as a thought, just a blip of an urge would come into my mind, there was nothing I could do to stop myself. I had zero self-control, and after indulging, I would feel physically sick. It wasn't too long before I started legitimately hating myself. I would hear sermons or read passages in the Bible that talked about those who are steeped in sin and how they would burn in fiery pits and be separated from God for eternity, be considered putrid and lost, etc. I felt condemned to hell, that I would never be saved, that I would just be this nasty, useless thing forever. When I looked in the mirror, I didn't see myself. I didn't know what the hell I was looking at. And I felt like everyone else could see what I saw and must have considered me the ugliest person they'd ever met. I became angry, mean, and selfish, on top of being depressed and lost. I tried really hard to fake happiness, but I doubt it was very convincing because I did not genuinely feel happy during that time. If I did, I immediately crushed it because I didn't feel like I deserved any happiness. This was all my reality for 5 years. By the time I was 17, I had learned how to navigate around this addiction. It still plagued me daily, but I had almost just accepted it as something I could never shake. That acceptance didn't lead to a better mindset, though. If anything, it made it worse. If you're someone who has allowed a sin to become a part of you, then you know what I'm talking about. The second you stop fighting sin, the second you let it settle permanently into your life, you almost feel backwards. Everything's off. Nothing feels right. It's a strange feeling. I felt completely at odds with God. Through the whole 5 years, by the way, I would pray. I would pray that God would just make me stop what I was doing. I would beg him to change me miraculously. I would ask him why he even made me, why he would create someone so useless. My prayers were not genuine, and they were always followed with self-hatred, which is basically God-hatred because he made myself. Having accepted this sin, I fell deeper into depression and started having vivid suicidal thoughts and feelings. I would ponder how I would go about killing myself and what I could stomach doing. I didn't know how I was gonna die, I just knew I wouldn't live to be 18. I had been so self-absorbed in this struggle and so stuck inside my own bubble of addiction that I never thought beyond high school. I never thought about college, I never thought about a career, I never thought about starting my own family, having my own home. None of that. I planned on dying, taking myself out of a world where I didn't fit, where I felt no one wanted me anyway. One day in my bedroom, after falling to my addiction for the millionth time, I was done. I knew I could not keep doing this, keep being this sick, shameful person. I broke down and started praying. It was different though than my other prayers. I begged God to save me. I had prayed the prayer of salvation when I was about 8 years old, but I knew I needed to do it again. I rededicated my life to Christ that day, and I'm not gonna say that from that moment on, I never looked at another pornographic image ever again. Unfortunately, that's not how recovering from addiction works. It takes effort, and what did happen from that moment on was a new spark inside me that was ready to work and fight and get free from this addiction. I considered that my deliverance because without that urgency to change, I never would have. The next couple of years, I spent going longer and longer spans in between slips. I read countless articles and testimonies. I changed my lifestyle. I got healthier. I censored what I watched and even listened to. I changed my prayers to be more specific to what exactly needed to change neurologically in order for me to overcome triggers and patterns of brainwaves that had developed wrongly due to being exposed to graphic sexual content so early in life. I was able to take control of the problem. The only thing I hadn't done was tell anyone. And I knew that this secret, if it remained a secret, it would continue to have power. The first person I confided in was a youth leader, a woman named Luana, who I trusted and looked up to. This wasn't until I was 21. So for almost 10 years, I suffered and struggled in complete silence, all alone. I was terrified that anyone I told would think less of me, that think I was disgusting. Finally, I got the nerve to spit it out to her after youth group one Wednesday night, and the first thing she said was that she didn't see me any differently. I hadn't even told her my fear, she simply already knew somehow. I broke down after she said that, just wept my eyes out. After talking with me some more, sharing her own struggles and giving me encouragement, she gave me a verse to always remember. To this day, I consider it my life verse, 1 Corinthians 10:13. She encouraged me to tell my parents about it, and I ended up telling my mom a few months later. She was shocked, but not angry. She just wished I had told her sooner so that she could have helped. It felt so dumb for keeping it to myself the whole time. Things would have been so different for me if I had told someone years before. On another note, I didn't just rededicate my life to Christ. When I was 17, I also made the commitment to observe the Torah, the Law of Moses, first five books of the Bible. My parents had already been headed down that path, so I decided to join them. The biggest part of that commitment for me was keeping kosher, so no more pork. I used to live off of pepperoni pizza, you don't even know. But I made that commitment, though, because I knew I needed structure and self-discipline. That's how I view the commands in the Torah, as a guiding tool to help you hone those things in your life. Obedience to God requires self-control, self-sacrifice, discipline. It's adhering to a higher standard. I grew up in church listening to pastors talk about how the Torah is just a bunch of rules and regulations. Well, don't we need those? I definitely did. They were a major part of my salvation and deliverance, and I've maintained the commitment for 12 years now. Going through all that I have was difficult, and I had to deal with after effects even after I overcame my internet urge. Just like any addiction, a porn addiction leaves you with long-term side effects that you have to face and deal with. And I would advise anyone going through this same struggle to get help. Tell someone, seek counsel. Like, tell me, talk to me. It's a rough road, but worth getting past it. The Bible talks about sexual sin being a sin that corrupts from the inside. And there's not a truer statement than that. I experienced it. It took me a long time to find myself and my identity in God. I struggled with hardcore shame that would overwhelm me at times and would be my number one go-to whenever a relationship didn't work out or a guy led me on. I believed I wasn't worthy of anything good. Another reason, by the way, why I never saw marriage as something that would happen for me. It honestly wasn't until 2017, a full 10 years after rededicating my life, that I finally faced my demons and became free of that shame and was able to find myself. From then on, I was able to experience more and hear God speak to me and lead me to where I was meant to be. I traveled, I met new people, reconnected with old friends, became involved in youth ministry. I finally felt new. I had a whole new identity. And that's what this whole podcast is about, identity. My own identity crisis was years and years of believing I was a pervert, a deviant, a disgrace, etc. But those were false identifiers. I wasn't a pervert, I just had a demon to face. I wasn't a deviant, I only needed salvation. And I absolutely wasn't a disgrace. I was lost and needed a guiding hand. I was also not unworthy. I was and am worthy of love and happiness and good things. By the grace of God, I'm worthy. And it is only through God that I find my true identity. As a closing note, I just want to say that whatever you feel bound by is not in control. It doesn't define you. You're always able to overcome whatever may be plaguing your life, no matter if it's pornography, anxiety disorder, alcoholism, drug use, etc. You can rise above those things, whether you think you can or not. You are absolutely not defined by your struggles. Some people are even tempted to own their false identity as a crutch to hide behind. But that's living in this perpetual state of victimhood, and that's no way to live. So, my advice would be to cast off those false identifiers, face the problem by confessing and praying and seeking counsel, and find your identity in something substantial and unshakable. So, that's all I have to say. Thanks for listening.
I sincerely hope that you are enjoying this podcast as much as I enjoy making it and putting it out for you to listen to. If you do find enjoyment in it, if you do find inspiration in it, I ask that you consider to become a listener supporter and help support in buying better equipment for the podcast and furthering it along. If you can't or don't feel led to be a supporter of finances, then just share it. Share it with your friends. If somebody comes to mind while you're listening to one of the episodes, send it to them. Or if the entire show reminds you of somebody, you think, oh my goodness, this person needs to hear this message right here. Send it. Share it out. And give me your feedback on it. Help this become the best podcast that it can be. Thank you.